Amplify your attitude so that your excellence is your best evidence. I'll say that again. Amplify your attitude so that your excellence is your best evidence. In other words, you shouldn't have to tell someone you're a good person. The way you treat people should be your evidence. You shouldn't have to tell people that you are a hard worker. Your due diligence should be your evidence. You shouldn't tell people that you want to make the world a better place and you're only making decisions out of selfishness and out of self-indulgence. You need to bring your personal ideology to a perspective where everything you do, everything you say, it's got to make the situation better. My grandfather told me that you have an obligation that every room you walk into, you got to make it better. People are going to talk about you either way. So what they say about you when you're walking away, that's how they truly feel. People might not remember what you did, but they'll remember how you made them feel. And when we can amplify our attitudes so that our excellence is our best evidence, you don't have to pontificate. You don't have to brag. You don't have to be conceited. You can just let the results of your actions be your best evidence. Don't talk it, walk it.
Welcome to Professor of Perseverance podcast, where people share their stories of life tragedies, of accepting adversities, begin battling, and conquer challenges to not only survive difficulties, but also thrive in life. Are you having a bad day? Do you need help in overcoming adversities? Do you need help mastering courage to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, then this podcast is for you. Professor of Perseverance podcast will inspire you to face challenges head on in life and provide motivation to be a leader for others by setting examples of winning through difficulties while encouraging people to live life to the fullest. Your host of Professor of Perseverance podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Thank you for coming to the Professor of Perseverance podcast. Today, we have a person that we'll probably get in two or three topics, but the main topic is he was a spinal cord injury, and listen to this, spinal cord injury, the same day, well, maybe not the same day, but same date as mine. We were just probably years different from there. But I want to introduce you to him. His book right here, Lead Out Loud. And I got mine signed somewhere inside. I got a signed copy. Where it's right. Well, it's signed. It's signed. What I'm going to do is, since he signed and gave it to me, Vincent did, I'm going to put it on eBay and get my next mortgage paid with the from here. So, all right, Vincent, let me, I got to take my glasses off so I can read. Got to take my glasses. All right. Vincent Ivan Phelps, an expert in amplifying attitudes and promoting communication excellence. He's also a business communications VIP. All right, you got the VIP for his initials. You get it? Vincent Ivan Phelps, also very important persons. So, he's a motivational speaker, workshop facilitator, and a speech coach. He has spoken in over 400 American cities, 5 foreign countries, and this may have changed because his book's been out for a while, and over 20 years of this work. Now, here's the cream of the crop right here. He has earned one of the 11% of his speaking industry of 11% of people that have earned the CSP, Certified Speaking Professional. So I got his book here. Now give my glasses on. And so let's have Vincent Phelps.
Hello, Professor of Perseverance. How are you, Dr. James?
I'm great, man. How about you?
Doing fantastic. Always an honor and a privilege, sir, to spend time with you, Dr. James. Thank you for having me.
I want to change great to blessed. That's why I'm wearing my shirt today.
Hey, you wear it well, sir. You wear it well.
I want to wear my shirt and tell everybody I'm blessed today. So even though I got out of bed this morning with a flat tire, and I'm still riding on a flat tire, but we're here to help other people, Vince, and that's what we're here for.
You got it, Doctor. My grandfather told me, Dr. James, if we woke up this morning, we'd be half of them already.
There we go. That's right. And let me get to you. Don't just James is great. My doctor is not in the doctoring of the. It just means I learned to play the game with my doctorate.
I understand. I respect you. I want everybody to know how smart you are, sir. I'll say, James, if you prefer.
That was just James is great. Now, I can't write out a prescription, but I can drive you down to the store and I can pick them up for you, though.
I take it. Hey, sometimes the driver's better than the medication.
By the way, that could be. You know, the who you socialize with could be better than medicine sometimes.
Absolutely.
So, all right, Vincent, now this show here is about overcoming adversities, and we're going to get into, you know, more of your speaking and stuff as well, because that's an avenue as well to get over. But
yes, sir.
You had a spinal cord injury, September 11th.
Yes,
my
sir.
Spinal cord injuries, September 11th.
What is it with that day? What's going on with that day, James? Man, well,
I tell
you, need to stay home. September, stay in the house.
What year was yours?
2007.
I'm sorry to say this. Mine was in 1983. So
you beat me.
Well, I tell people I had 9/11 way before our country had 9/11. All right. So let's go into how you sustained your spinal cord injury.
Yes, sir. The night before September the 10th, I was cleaning my home. I was profusely trying to impress my girlfriend, who was my wife now, of going on 17 years of being together. And I cleaned with Tilex and mildew and the shower scrub. And I didn't have proper ventilation, James. And the house was so heavily fumigated with the ammonia and a lot of the fumes that I got sick and I couldn't even breathe. I had to sleep downstairs because the fumes were so strong. And I was supposed to travel to Atlanta that Sunday morning to perform at an open mic poetry. And I was going to donate all of the proceeds to all of the evacuees from Katrina. Well, my girlfriend came over that evening and I was sick and I slept on the couch. And she opened the door and she could smell all of the cleaning chemicals. She's like, whoa, what have you been cleaning? I said, yes. She saw my face. I had been runny nose, runny eyes, and I just did not look up to performance level. And she said, you do not need to go. You do not need to drive. You don't look good. You don't sound good. Just stay here. And I figured if I don't go, I can't keep my word and help out the evacuees. So I drove anyway. Get on the highway Sunday morning. I'm on Interstate 75. I'm right around the not too far from Cartersville. And I start having one of those sneezing fits, James. And I lost control of my truck. I had an SUV at the time and the sunroof was open. My car flips over off the highway. Nobody was hurt, thank goodness. I flip over about 2.5-3 times. My skull was split open. They had to push it together with sutures. I broke my neck in two places. They had to remove bone from my hip. I had to do a fusion to my neck and spine, C1 and C2 vertebrates. There are two titanium screws. I'd also had broken my finger. That's why this one is facing north and south at the same time.
There you go.
And I had an 8-hour surgery and about 8 months of rehab. And that's what happened.
I guess that's enough, huh?
Man, that was not a, you know what? It could have been a worse day, but James, oh, that hurt. It was so painful when they finished the surgery that it hurt to sneeze. So just when it's your neck and your back, everything hurts. Sitting up hurts. Laying down hurts. Rolling over hurts. Sitting still hurts. You have to ask yourself, if you drop something, you have to ask yourself, how important is it that I need to pick this up, or should I just wait for somebody to come by the house? You have to start questioning how much things mean to you, because everything hurt, and you just have these self-deprecating thoughts, James. You want to take medication. You're thinking about doing things that alleviate your pain. You're thinking about, why me? It's a very mentally challenging situation when the thought of you being in less pain is the best thing you can think of that day.
I have been there before. So yeah, been there. Know the feeling that the and a lot of it is not just physical pain, it's the emotional pain that travels with it. And that seems to be more harmful than the physical pain. When you start believing all the emotional pain mentally, and now you got a whole game, you got the triple threat going now. Mental, emotional, and physical.
And so, for you, James, how much of it were you asking yourself, when is this going to end?
Oh, I still do that today.
Even today.
I still do that today. My biggest thing is when I can transfer out of my bed to get into my wheelchair and not hit the floor, we're already having a miracle today, baby.
So it's already that's a miracle good stuff. For me. That is good stuff, sir.
So now I've had other spinal cord injured people talking before, but you seem to be a little different than others. And I don't mean skin a little darker tan more than us. I don't mean that. But,
I don't think my neck cared my skin color. It broke the same way.
That's right. So, but I don't mean that either.
Yes,
but you don't seem to have the spinal cord damage that we have. The other people I've interviewed are paraplegics, can't move their legs at all. Other quadriplegics have troubles with arms like me and legs. But you seem to have been blessed and missed part of the game.
Yes, sir. When I talked to my neurologist, Dr. Gallagher, who operated on me in Erlanger Hospital, initially the diagnosis was that due to the severity of my neck, that I most likely would not be paralyzed from the neck down, but I would most likely lose the use of my lower body extremities. So they were doing a lot of exercises on poking my feet and electronic stimuli and looking for a spinal reaction. And initially I was unresponsive and they didn't know if it was just because of swelling or if it was because of lack of nerve. They didn't know. It was too soon. After I started showing some response to stimuli, James, I just got lucky. They told me that what I had was almost identical to the same type of surgical spine damage that Christopher Reeve had. Mm-hmm. And we know how that brother turned out. He kept that same attitude like you, James, but his physical condition was worse. And they said due to health, luck, previous experience, inches, not even inches, what they call nano inches. It's just so microscopic that a break this way versus a break that way is just the difference of how the bone was severed, how quickly they could get me into surgery, the skill of the surgeon, bone availability, previous nerve damage, the age of the person, that person's physical conditioning, just all these factors that had nothing to do with anything that you or I could do. I just got lucky. I got so fortunate because the difference between you and I is nanometers, inches. You know, I didn't try to position myself a certain way. Well, as that car was flipping, I'm thinking, crap, this hurts. And it just went, I'm hearing metal and damage and glass everywhere. So people who look at me now would never know unless they saw my scar on my hip and the scar on my neck and the gash on my head. That's why I keep my hair so thick, cover up that hole. they would never know that the accident was that severity. I was very fortunate, James.
Oh, yes. I'm assuming I had a similar surgery because I had bone taken off my hip, put on both sides of my vertebrae. And
yes, sir. And I never did the halo or any of that. I didn't have the halo.
I just had a regular neck brace. I didn't get a halo. And they didn't put screws in titanium screws at that time. They just took old-fashioned wire and wired it all around.
Thank you for setting that trend so they can improve it. By the time I got jacked up,
I mean, when you first look at an X-ray, you're going, "What is all that wire?" They didn't do that with me.
Gotcha. Yes, sir.
So you talking when you first said, I didn't realize you were at a C1 and 2. I mean, you're up there where the breathing and respiratory, you know, all that takes place and your heartbeat and everything takes place up into C1, C2. So you are very blessed that you didn't lose respiratory, you know, to be able to put on a ventilator or something like that. So you're very blessed.
I was lucky. I was, sir. I do have permanent nerve damage. I have sensitivity issues with heat. I have sensitivity issues with numbness and tingling, and spontaneously I will have just these spasms where I'll be in the speech of my hand will start going like that, and I'll just put my hand down and just keep on going, and I'll use this hand, then this finger will start twitching, then I'll put that finger down. So a lot of my reactions to my injury are controllable to the extent where I can hide them. But for someone like you, James, where your attitude is so strong, where I can hide a twitch or two, you just can't hide a wheelchair. So know that what you are going through is true perseverance, because when I walk into a room, they don't see my injury. When you go into a room, they know that you went through something. So you are the true professor of perseverance, because it has not impacted your positivity or your outlook on helping others. And I appreciate that for you, brother.
Hey, thank the show's over and everything. Thank you, Vincent, for coming in. I gotta go break my arm now so I can pat myself on the back. Hey, James,
we're running out of stuff to break, James. Don't break anything.
That's right. Nothing more. So, hey, a friend of mine, Jamie, come in. He's saying that both of us, he's talking, hey, thank you, Jamie, inspired others.
Thank you, Jamie.
All right, we're just talking. We're guys of inspiration. God put us guys here to give strength for those who are searching. Thank you, Jamie, for coming in. Great words there.
Jamie. Bring it, brother.
So, I didn't realize this until you just mentioned it. I didn't know either that one of that really tears me up, that if I'm outside, and here's some things they never tell you in rehab. This is stuff you find out on your own after you get out. But I didn't realize that I can feel hot and cold. I can feel touch. I could tell when, even the night they got injured, I could tell when they could move my toe up and down. I can tell them that. But I couldn't tell sharp or dull at that time. That's that, you know, they do that prick and I'd go, I can feel it, but I couldn't tell dull or sharpness. They didn't tell me this. And I found out I got into coaching baseball, and when it was 90 plus degrees, I was burning up. No one told me that my sweat glands are paralyzed.
Hypothalamus. So
I had to learn to pour water all over me when I stayed outside too long to cool my body down. And you have to
manually recalibrate your hypothalamus. That is crazy that impacts the neck and the nerves, where you have to be your own body's thermostat.
Yes, exactly. And you had mentioned that you still had issues with that some, you know, but the overheating.
Between 40 degrees and right around 90 degrees, it feels the same to me. So it has to be probably high 90s or almost freezing for me to feel anything. I don't wear t-shirts. I don't wear jackets because I'm almost always comfortable. So there's good and bad to it. When my wife and I go out and everybody's wearing a hat and gloves, she's thinking, you need to wear a jacket. Like, I'm not cold. She'll look at me. Okay, you're right. Okay. So, and I don't sweat a whole lot, which is good as a speaker. Because even though I get nervous, I always look dry.
That's right. They thought you put that underarm stuff on your forehead. They thought.
No, what? I stay dry. It's That's awesome. Right. I stay That's dry. Right. It's great.
To hear that, I'm surprised. Since you're able to get up and walk around, and I know you exercise a lot and everything, but then to hear you don't have the cooling off mechanism, the thermostat correctly set in your body. That's amazing to me to understand that. And I tell when we interview other people with spinal cord injuries that we're all different, you know, just because someone has the same level, and I'm a C5-6, and so even though I have the same level, doesn't mean we all do everything the same way or we can all do the same thing.
Right. James, when you mentioned the same thing, how it impacts people differently, this is where someone like you, James, who is such an advocate of positive thinking, here's how I can learn from you, James. As a professional speaker and as a communication coach, I had attitude and confidence and self-esteem issues, because the first time I realized that my life was going to change was when I tried to lift something and I couldn't lift it because my neck hurt from the top of my neck to my butt, like my whole spine hurt. And being an athlete and a martial artist, I know how my muscles are supposed to feel. This pain, to the best that I could describe it, was the word electrical. And I knew my body, and I'm thinking, this feels like somebody is turning on some wires inside me. This isn't a pain, soreness. It isn't a broken, but I've had bones broken. This feels almost like electricity. And that's when they brought up the nerve stuff. So about a month later, I started having these spasms where my back would just, I would push down on my back. Tylenol would do nothing. Heat press did nothing. Then after the spine would go away, I would get this numbness where I couldn't feel my freaking hands. And it felt like I had been sitting on my hands. I'm trying to lift stuff and I can't hold it. So I go to the doctor about my nerves, about the pain, electricity, about the numbness. And I went back and saw my doctor maybe four times in a month. And I got an attitude with my surgeon. And I said, how long am I going to have to put up with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I could see a look of, I'm not going to say anger, but I'm going to say that my surgeon looked at me with what I felt was shame. And he tells me, young man, you are not even supposed to be here right now. You are lucky that you feel anything right now. There are people who have gone what you went through who can't move, who have to breathe through a tube, who have to have people feed them. They can't wipe their own butt. They can't say it. And it was this, how dare you complain about being in pain when you can, you know, people would love to feel something right now. And that's when I realized, oh crap, I have been looking at this, how selfish of me, how irresponsible of me. And I changed my outlook of, if I can get through this, what can I do to help other people who are going through stuff? Who we are isn't what we've been through. Who we are is how we endure what we've been through. And that's why I decided to change.
Yes. I'm a big believer. Being positive may not change everything that's going on, but it'll help you get through the situation.
If you're going to be in pain and then you laugh, you're still in pain, but you don't think about it for about 8 seconds. And I learned to laugh a lot because I was in a lot of pain.
There you go.
Hey, brother. It can be a lot worse. And as bad as my condition was, no, you have your own challenges, James. With your challenge, you know, James, if there are people that would say, I would love to be able to move around like James. I would love to have my full faculty. James can breathe on his own. Then there's people who are thinking, well, you're paralyzed, but you're still alive. You can still see your loved ones. You can still think. You can still talk. So there's so many different levels of appreciation. How dare we be upset with where we are instead of appreciating what more we have to gain?
I was driving one day and I saw some people walking and it was like 95 degrees. Uh-huh. And I'm driving, got my air conditioning going. And I was thinking to myself, well, I'm glad I'm able to drive.
You know what? Exactly.
But then I turned the twist around. They may be outside going, well, I'm glad I'm able to walk to get to the where I'm supposed to be. And so, you know, two different people, two different situations, and both of them be positive.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm glad I'm walking to get where I need to go, where I'm saying, boy, I'm glad I can drive in this air conditioning. It's two different scopes of event going on from there.
Absolutely, James.
We got an English teacher in France saying hello to everybody.
Hello, and what's your name, English teacher from France?
Saying hello. And then we got a friend of both of ours, John Bentley.
John, my dude, my man, my hero. What's up, John?
John Bentley. Hey, we're gonna get him on here one day talking
about. He'd be a great one. John is fantastic. He'd be a great one.
Man.
I just realized something, James. I have the honor of having you and John simultaneously in my Pro Speakers Kit course, the course that teaches you how to become a professional speaker, more successful. I had both of you in that class at the same time. I had no idea how much greatness was in my world at that class. So I congratulations on both of you for graduating. And it is a joy to see you guys both doing great things right now.
And we both got your book from that same event.
I'm honored, sir.
From that same event.
I'm honored.
Anybody need a leadership speaker to come to you? You got John Bentley and also Vincent. Both of them are great speakers. They would be great at your next event. So,
and John and I even did an event together, and we had really high feedback. So I'm honored. One of the things I value is that when I have a person graduate from my Pro Speakers Kit course, teaching you how to have a more successful career as a motivational speaker, I want to bring those speakers along, give them more opportunities, because we've got to make sure that not only are we teaching information, but we're also providing opportunities.
And you were able to bless me with an opportunity last year. You sent out an email and everything. And went last, actually, it was last year on my birthday to Chattanooga to go speak. And as I was driving, you even called me on my phone and left me a message while I was driving saying happy birthday to me and have a blast at the speaking event.
My pleasure, James.
Pleasure. So I remember that because it was on my birthday as well.
Yes, sir. We got to get back.
What I told everybody on one of my five birthdays. One of my five birthdays. So that I have every year.
Yes, sir.
All right, Vincent. So let's and I want to go back there for a second. You were talking about all the spasms you started having.
Yes,
and,
sir. You know, I still have them.
And so let me explain when I was in the hospital and at that time had my surgery. I didn't have a halo, but I had like a horseshoe that was screwed into my head, and they were hanging 10 pounds of weights off of it, trying to stretch my neck, trying to get the vertebrae to pop back in place. But after that surgery and everything, I started having muscle spasms. And one, you know how doctors come in 3:30 in the morning, and then next one comes in at 4:30 in the morning. Can't sleep in a hospital. And so I remember one come in, I said, hey, I'm having muscle spasms. Is that a good sign or not? Because then I wasn't moving anything from my neck down. And he said, oh, that's good. That means there's a signal trying to get through the damaged area. And so that's good. Well, an hour later, another doctor comes in and I said, doctor, I'm having muscle spasms. Is that good or bad? Oh, that's bad. So you get two doctors.
You know what? Ignore that second doctor and just focus on the first one.
Well, the only reason he said it was bad is if you're in your wheelchair and if you're not seatbelted in, then it may throw you out of your wheelchair. And I'm going, okay. Yes, sir. I wasn't going that far. I was wondering, is it good physically?
I don't know if I'm with that bad, brother, but if it gets to that point, that's a whole nother. Yeah, you need two masseuses then.
That's right. So, all right, Vincent, let's get more into your – after you sustained your injury and you went through your rehab and realizing things turned out a lot better than it could have been.
Yes, sir.
How did you end up starting your communications program from there? How did you start your own business?
I was working,
what should I say? Should I say – because I was reading you were in school for communications, so maybe you had this in your profile early, but did this pep jump start get you going, looked how precious life is, and you know, from there?
I was with the company for 13 years being a communication consultant, and I had always had aspirations of wanting to do more larger. And I'd reached the limit of where I could go within that company. And I'd made some suggestions and recommendations, and they just weren't part of that company's vision. I never wanted to be a business owner. I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I liked where I was, and I was comfortable with it. I'm thinking, you know, after 13 years, you know, seven more years, you know, 20 years, you're retired, you're done. And I end up being advised by several people, my parents, my girlfriend at the time, wife now, my best friends, other clients, they said, Vincent, you can do this on your own. You could take all these ideas that aren't being incorporated and you can make your own thing. And I grew up around entrepreneurs. I worked for an entrepreneur and I saw how tirelessly they worked. And I didn't know if I wanted to work that hard. I didn't know if I had that skill, that drive, that experience. And it just wasn't something I was feeling. After the accident, my whole concern was, even if I did try to do this, where am I going to get clients? How do I start a business? Who's going to trust me? And my wallpaper, my wall in my living room in my old home, it was just avalanched with cards and letters. And can I turn my screen around? See those letters?
Yes, sir.
See all of that? Well, these are just a few of the cards and the letters that I took from my home. My wife is mad at me. I threw so many away. But I had a lot of them. And my dad and my wife now, she said, every one of those cards, every one of those letters, that's someone who trusts you. That's someone who believes in what you're doing. So I decided to go for it. I decided to take a chance. I looked at what skills I had. I looked at what skills people needed. And I wanted to find a way to incorporate not just technical interpersonal skills, but how to listen, how to be a more prolific speaker, how to adapt your communication style, how to reduce conflicts, how to think positively, how to focus on solutions. So I came up with all these different mechanisms that can be incorporated to make sure that wherever you are in life, it starts with how you think about yourself and then putting those into practical steps. And even though the company name was called Communication VIP and the VIP are my initials, the VIP has also a primary meaning in what we teach. And that VIP stands for very impactful presentations.
There you go. Awesome. And so you just go back to what you thought earlier, you know, about starting your own business and everything. I'm a firm believer. I mean, we don't have to listen to the naysayers. We have people that are going to say, well, you're wasting your time. You know, right. You got friends that would laugh at you. Yeah, friends that are going to encourage you, but you got some that's going to go, you're wasting your time, you know. But I'm a firm believer. If we listen to everybody else, we're in the wrong business or whatever we're doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. We need to be doing it because it's something we want to do and we love to do and want to help other people. All right. Mm-hmm. But here's the big thing. We hurt ourselves more than what the outside people can tell us.
Tell it, James. Tell it, brother.
Yeah, by going, I can't do this. Where would I get my clients? Who's going to believe in me? Well, if I don't believe in myself, how do you expect anybody else to believe in you?
Exactly, James. And here's the problem that entrepreneurs have, at least the one that I had. I listen to advice from stupid people. And here's what you got to do. I have a rule that everybody needs to incorporate. There are only two types of people that you need to take advice from. Take advice from someone who's done it and succeeded successfully. Or take advice from someone who has done it and has failed successfully. Anybody else, your mama, your daddy, your cousin, your wife, if they haven't done it and succeeded, or if they haven't done it and failed, where are they getting their information from? They're speaking out of fear and reservations, sometimes jealousy, sometimes empathy, sometimes lack of information. But if you're trying to tell me how to build a boat and you ain't never built a boat, where's your advice? I wouldn't use that kind of wood. How do you know? I wouldn't use that nail. You don't even know what that nail is. Oh, sure. So if you've built a boat and it's a yacht, I will listen to you and know what you're doing. If you built a boat and that boat has sunk, I will listen to you because you clearly don't know what you're doing. But if you have not done it, take your advice and do something with it, because we've got to listen to people and know who to listen to. Most importantly, James, we need to know who to ignore, because some people do not have our best interest. They're just scared and jealous, and they don't know what to do or say. Listen to folks who have done it successfully or done it and failed. Everybody else, be respectful, but know their opinions. It's not worth as much.
And you know as well as I do, some people, they don't want you to succeed because they're not successful in their area, and they want to keep you down with them so they have somebody to talk to.
Right. Well, a lot of times, James, it's here's what my daughter brings up, the word haters. And she was saying that there are people who don't want you to succeed and they're called haters. And I have to give some more information. There is another level to that. Haters or people who are jealous, it's not that they want you to fail. That's a misconception. Here's the truth, James. When anybody is willing to take the risk and make the sacrifices and put forth the commitment to do better, other people see that person's drive as indirect challenge of that person's inability to do more. So if this person is successful, then the knucklehead has to ask, well, dadgummit, why didn't I try harder? Why didn't I do more? And their success is a reflection of somebody else's lack of effort. So they're not mad at you. They're disappointed in themselves. And your success is proof that that person could have been more if they'd have tried harder. And instead of saying, I'm a slacker, I don't want to try as hard, I'm lazy, I'm scared, it's better for them to put you down. That way, everybody is average and mediocre. But in my world, we should all be exceptional. So you should look for mediocre people to rise up, not for exceptional people to drop back down. Are we preaching, James?
That's great words from your daughter to inspire the rest of that. Because I never looked at it that way. I just assumed.
That's it. Haters don't hate you.
That's a great way
Haters
to look at it.
Haters hate the thought that you are a representation of what they could be if they tried harder.
Yes, that's awesome. So you got a very intelligent young daughter there.
Oh, I wish I was as smart as my daughter. Taylor Campbell Phipps, that is one of my best friends, one of the smartest people. And she is quick to tell daddy when he's doing right. And she's way too quick to tell me when I'm doing wrong.
There you go. That's awesome. So that's all. I never looked at it that way before.
Yes, sir.
So it gives me a new perspective on a way to view things on that. That's awesome.
That's what perseverance is all about. No, we're about perspectives here. No, we wanted to make sure that, hey, that's what perseverance is all about. A new perspective, James.
Here, old John. John says, John Bailey says, where did I submit the tithe?
Oh, man. Go ahead, John. He says, hallelujah.
Yeah. So that's awesome how we never thought of it that way. So,
yes,
all right. So, all right, Vincent, let's, I want to ask you, we're about ready to wrap this up and everything, but give me one good word, one good inspirational thought, something's going to motivate somebody that may be struggling today that needs some type of, how do I get out of here the best way today? And it may help me in the long term, but can give me something that I can use today. So if you can do that for us.
Yes, sir. Here's what I'd like to leave all of your viewers with, James. Remember this. Amplify your attitude so that your excellence is your best evidence. I'll say that again. Amplify your attitude so that your excellence is your best evidence. In other words, you shouldn't have to tell someone you're a good person. The way you treat people should be your evidence. You shouldn't have to tell people that you are a hard worker. Your due diligence should be your evidence. You shouldn't tell people that you want to make the world a better place and you're only making decisions out of selfishness and out of self-indulgence. You need to bring your personal ideology to a perspective where everything you do, everything you say, it's got to make the situation better. My grandfather told me that you have an obligation that every room you walk into, you got to make it better. People are going to talk about you either way. So what they say about you when you're walking away, that's how they truly feel. People might not remember what you did, but they'll remember how you made them feel. And when we can amplify our attitudes so that our excellence is our best evidence, you don't have to pontificate. You don't have to brag. You don't have to be conceited. You can just let the results of your actions be your best evidence. Don't talk it, walk it.
There you go. I love the old.
Let the choir sing. Wow.
Love the expression, you know, walk the walk, talk the talk,
That's it, brother.
Everybody else, they're going to see how you are, again, by your evidence, like you just said, about how they witness you. So,
yes, sir.
Go and tell everybody how they can get hold of you in case anybody wants to get you as a speaker or a workshop facilitator. That's easy for you to say. So, tell us how we can get hold of you.
Yes, sir. My direct line is 423-410-40. The IRS loves that number. That's 423-400-1040. Or you can reach me through any of your favorite social media streams through my name directly, Vincent Phipps.
So, well, Vincent, I want to thank you for coming on. This has been a fun, educational time.
It's been an honor.
It's been like being with you and John Bentley. I feel like today's already been a blessing for me.
Oh, you're okay, brother.
wear my shirt today. It's been blessed for you and John to be here today, for have blessed me. So thank you for your good, positive attitude and everything like that. And thank hopefully 100 years from now, somebody's going to find this, and whatever it be called then, hopefully everything is transferred, that someone can get something out there that's going to help them. So thank you again, Vincent. Appreciate all you've done. Everybody else, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.